Well, good morning. I'm Stan Bunger along with Holly Kwan and Holly's disjointed microphone flag. Why is this thing not on a microphone?
It is on a microphone. My microphone is right there. I was going to take it out because I thought we would attach it.
All right.
But that's
we're speaking with up-to-the-minute developments on the COVID-19 coronavirus story as we're sort of sliding into some new elements here. Among the developments this morning, a decision by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to deploy the National Guard to New Rochelle, which has been a coronavirus hotspot.
I mean, that sounds like some serious business that we would never think that we would see.
Well, in fact, quoting Governor Cuomo, this is unique in the United States of America. We haven't seen this anywhere else. Now, New Rochelle has had more than twice as many diagnosed cases as New York City has had. So there's obviously a hot spot there. Cuomo comparing the number of cases in New York to Washington State, where the outbreak has hit at least 160 people, killing 22, mostly elderly people. This coming at a time when we're learning about a shift, perhaps, in public health officials' strategy in dealing with COVID-19.
From containment, which they have been doing before, to mitigation. Now, the CDC head this morning was testifying, and he had said that we've moved from travel from China and Asia as being a concern to travel from Europe. And he thinks that where a lot of these new cases are coming from are people from Europe who have gone back to their communities and seeded them, as he said. And that's where a lot of these new cases are coming from. So in that vein, this window of trying to contain something like this has passed. And that's sort of what they've said, is that we have to go past the notion of containment and into mitigation. In the meantime, we've got this cruise ship off of, you know, in Oakland, where all these people are getting off and they're getting on buses and they're going to be quarantined for 14 days.
And we have sort of what seemed like, to the layperson, conflicting signals sent by two counties in Northern California. Santa Clara County bans all public gatherings of 1,000 or more people. This will soon impact the sports
Sharks
business.
Games.
It's already led to consternation. The Sharks have a game coming up in a week and a half.
And the Earthquakes have a game on the 21st.
Right. On the other hand, in Sacramento County, the public health department is saying we're moving away from that strategy. We're going to go with this notion of mitigation. So let's get some answers. We're going to be joined now on the phone line by Art Reingold. Dr. Reingold is head of the Epidemiology and Biostatistics Division at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Dr. Reingold, thanks for taking the time. So from a public health perspective, can you explain the shift in strategies? What do these two terms mean and how do they play out?
So, I think the easiest way to explain it is that containment is when we think we potentially can wall something off completely and basically bring spread or prevent spread in the community. And so I think certainly the initial attempt and approach was, if we can identify people with this infection for coming from country X, whatever it is, we can trace their contacts, we can use appropriate isolation and quarantine and prevent further spread in the community and therefore contain the problem. But once you have enough transmission going on in the community, that approach really becomes impractical for a variety of reasons. And so we basically end up acknowledging that there will be transmission going on in the community, but we would like to minimize it. And if we can impose certain constraints on people or get people to behave in a different way in terms of hand washing or the like, that we can at least spread things out, delay things a little bit, and that would be beneficial in a variety of different ways. So it's basically moving from trying to basically get rid of the infection within the community to acknowledging that it's there and trying to limit its spread as much as possible.
It sounds like containment would require you to be quick on your feet. And for instance, when they were trying to seal off Wuhan, does it sound like that worked for them in China, or was it too late by then?
So I obviously we're still learning about exactly what the current status of things in China is. It would appear that the quite vigorous, potentially draconian steps that they took in China did have a substantial impact in preventing even a bigger outbreak there. But you know, what they did is it's not just calling out the National Guard, as you were referring to. It was really, in essence, locking down society, blocking travel, locking people inside their homes. I mean, it was really incredibly forceful at a scale that I don't think most of us can frankly imagine.
So that brings us to Italy, which maybe is somewhere between the two U.S. and Chinese approaches, but still 60 million people, a major nation, essentially being told, don't go to work, don't go to school, don't do commerce of most kinds, don't get on transit.
Right. Well, I think that's also a heroic effort. Again, at a scale that, frankly, we have not seen before. So whether it's, how that scale compares to what China did around Wuhan, I'm not sure. But it really is almost, I would say, or is unprecedented. And we're going to have to see just how vigorous they are in enforcing these restraints and what the effect is.
Is there a palatable happy medium that might be applied here?
So I think you were referring to the fact that different counties and organizations are struggling with how to increase social distancing, if you will, how to reduce the likelihood that people will be in close proximity and transmit the virus from one person to another. And so whether that's canceling sporting events, whether that's universities moving to distance-based learning, whether it's recommending that people keep their flying to an absolute, essential group of trips. I think all of those are intended to basically mitigate spread in the community, reduce the chances of people transmitting, and hoping that will work. But as anyone can tell, these are themselves pretty, have a substantial impact on people's activities, on their economic well-being, if you will, on society. So even these measures, while they're not like what Italy is doing or what China did, do have a huge impact. So I think individual counties or organizations are struggling with exactly how vigorous to be.
And of course, there's a school of thought, and perhaps uninformed, you can tell us what you feel about it, that this is overkill, that this is an illness that will kill some people, so does influenza, that it could be something we live with for a while, and that these measures might be more drastic than are needed.
So there's no question, if you read letters to the editor in newspapers, as I do, there's a whole range of opinions that go from this is all an overreaction, it's not a big deal, to, oh my God, this is a catastrophe and we're not doing enough, and everything in between. And I think that the challenge for public health is to get the balance right, or at least to do the best they can navigating that terrain. I'm a little worried about the comparison with flu and saying, this hasn't killed many people yet. Flu is a really bad disease that many people tend to minimize. But we don't need yet another respiratory virus killing substantial numbers of people or hospitalizing substantial numbers of people on top of the burden from flu. So I think we need to look at them somewhat separately.
Do you see other counties going the way of Santa Clara County and matching that and I guess limiting large scale events? Because at some point, I guess as an academic, you want to make sure that people, you aren't creating inertia in the wrong direction.
Well, my wife likes to point out that the people in public health agencies do public health. Professors just talk about it. I'm not in charge of making these very difficult decisions for a county or for a state, and I think that the people who are doing that are struggling with the kind of question that you're asking. But I think they are trying to balance, protecting the public without overreacting, and I think different counties or organizations are going to make different decisions.
I guess, obviously, if you could do this in an experimental form, if everybody stayed put behind doors for 2 weeks, this thing would die out, right? there'd be no way of transmitting it. That's not likely to happen. So is there, in the way public health people look at these situations, kind of an acceptable level of
exposure?
A level at which this thing will perk along without rising beyond that?
Well, I don't know about an acceptable level. We don't want people getting very sick. We don't want people dying. If it's your grandmother who dies, that's not an acceptable level, even if it's one person. So I don't like to think about it in terms of an acceptable level. But I do think that, again, particularly since we're still having a fair bit of flu and our hospitals are pretty full, we are basically trying to reduce the stress on our healthcare system and our hospitals and our intensive care units, and if we can reduce transmission to a certain extent or at least delay it, that will potentially be very, very helpful in terms of making sure that when people do get sick, they have access to a hospital bed, a respirator, an intensive care unit, whatever they need.
Dr. Rango, let me ask you a question that one of our Twitter followers posed, and that has to do with sort of transparency and giving people the ability to make better decisions. And that is, why do not public health officials and or the CDC release more specific information on what they know about where people who've been diagnosed with the virus were, what their paths were? Maybe that kind of information is soon not going to be so available because maybe we're not doing the contact tracing so much.
So I don't know how much of that information people have about the various cases. I think it's pretty clear in some instances, in a cluster, if you will, potentially like the one in New Rochelle in New York, that fundamentally what the common link is between people, but a lot of the transmission we think occurs within households. So it seems to me that information is probably available for some of the cases and not available for others, where it simply has not been possible to trace where that person became infected through trying to follow up with contacts. But I admit I don't know if there are delays that in releasing that information that we could overcome. The people who are doing all this work, both at the national and local level, are, I can tell you, stretched quite thin, and so it may just be a question of what they have to do on a given day and what the priorities are.
Well, maybe there's also that question about how comfortable are we as a society of having that information released. I was talking to a journalist who was in South Korea. He was telling me about their emergency alert protocol, and basically if somebody was diagnosed, confirmed positive with the virus, they would ask them, where have you been, where did you go? And if there are holes that they couldn't fill in where they were, the government would go into their credit card statements and track and basically piece together and map out where they've been. Once they had that map, they would then put out a text alert to everybody's phone in a localized area and say, if you were at X store on Main and Cross Street at 9 o'clock, you may have come in contact with this person. You might want to go get yourself tested. And it seems really efficient, but I asked, how do people feel about that? And they said, well, we don't have the privacy issues that you might have, in the U.S.
It's probably a challenge, too, because of this mystery, Dr. Rangold, regarding whether any one of us sitting in this studio or you at your end might actually have been exposed, might be asymptomatic, might be in the incubation period, because we don't have that level of testing.
So, all the things you raised are important issues. And again, what's possible in one country or one culture or one political climate might not work so well in a different setting, or might be unacceptable. And I think that is worth thinking about. But I also think that if the basic notion is that we can trace, where everyone has been and then do large-scale testing of people. It's a pretty Herculean effort. We're typically, in many of these individuals, not talking about a few contacts, but potentially hundreds of contacts that they may have had. And so it is a very large undertaking, let me put it that way.
Okay. Thank you for the time. I know we'll be in touch again. We appreciate your wisdom.
Sure. Sure, happy to help.
Okay, Dr. Art Reingold is the head of the Epidemiology and Biostatistics Division at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Just occurred to me one other element of the story that we heard about just before we sat down to do this session, Holly, is that the nation's health insurers have agreed with the White House to waive copays for any office visits that are COVID-19 related. Of course, one wonders how you'll be able to prove that it was a COVID-19 office visit and, you know, was it in network and all
of those
things.
If you're getting tested, I would hope that that would be covered.
One would assume. All right. So that wraps it up for now. The latest on COVID-19 and coronavirus, along with Holly Kwan. I'm Stan Bunger, and we thank you for joining us.